Hey everyone! Today we are talking about our underrated artists and overrated artists. But first, if your studio habits need a kick in the butt, ArtProf has everything you need, tutorials, critiques, and professional development. So, getting right in there, Jordan! Jordan, why do we have rolling eyes for Basquiat here? Tell us!
Oh boy. You know, Basquiat is one of those artists that I've heard so much, and then I go and look up the artwork, and I'm just not very impressed. I don't like the mark making. I don't like the colors. I just can't really wrap my mind around what makes it so revolutionary. So that's why I got the rolling eyes for him.
Well, Lauren, what do you think of Basquiat?
As a painter, I feel like that's kind of blasphemy to say that you don't like Basquiat.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I really appreciate his work for still being representational, like really pulling us out of that either like super abstract expressionism, crazy stuff that Pollock was doing, or like the really like clean mechanical silk screeny stuff that Andy Warhol was doing. It's like, here we have expressiveness. We have going back to mark making. I think Basquiat's related to this whole genre of naivety, which is thinking about how children make artwork and how artists are like trying to go back into that space, into that headspace. I could have my theory wrong there. But anyways, I feel like it's this, he was part of this return to more expressive representational work.
Well, Jordan, how do you feel about this, that one of Basquiat's paintings became the priciest work ever sold by a U.S. artist, and this piece sold for $110 million.
Yeah, first of all, you know what? If anyone sells their work for $110 million, good on you. Congrats. This dude's been dead for like 30-something years, so it's not like he's getting that money. But I just don't really see why someone would want to buy this for that much money. You know, you have... In my opinion, there are artists who are far more who don't have as much of a clout as this guy does, and they're able to produce work that is much more substantial and is more, commercially seen as something that's really strong, and they get less than a fraction of what this guy, in some cases, they don't even want to pay that type of artist. So, yeah.
Well, we have a pretty broad range of opinions here. Jazz says that Basquiat is genius. Slepnir says, I don't mind Basquiat. Whereas Soitenli says, Basquiat is the definition of overrated. So it looks like we have a broad range. I feel meh. Like, he's okay. I can really appreciate the expressiveness. I mean, I love that type of thing in artwork. But he doesn't get me... like excited. I don't feel like I'm on fire when I look at his work compared to some other artists. I guess I'm in between the two of you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jordan.
I was just going to say the thing about being expressive, I can understand being expressive and I can appreciate that, but it has to be done in the right way. Like, to me, these are just purely scribbles. Whereas there are times where I've seen someone who's more expressive. Like, you could say Van Gogh is expressive or Monet or something like that, but they produce a work that is much more, at least for me, more palatable. And I don't mean a pun in that way, but it's something that I would think is much more agreeable to the human eye.
Jazz is saying his art is raw and uninhibited, and I would have to agree with that. I think that there is a certain value that is happening in painters like Monet and in that realm, Van Gogh, Vuillard, all those people. They have this post-impressionistic, dreamlike space that they're in, but they're very much tied to a kind of reality that exists. And here we are, we're not in that age anymore. We are in we're like getting into almost like contemporary space here, where we're not just tied to our landscape, our reality around us. We can work with more than that.
Tired says he died in 1988, so he didn't see the money. I was going to bring that up because I think that part of him being so lauded actually has a lot to do with the mystique around his life and him befriending Andy Warhol and dying so young. I mean, why do you think everybody talks about Van Gogh? I mean, yes, the work is good, but the ear thing certainly helps in terms of visibility. I mean, Jordan, do you think this romantic story about Basquiat really has contributed to the overratedness, in your opinion?
I think so. And I am not someone who doesn't recognize that his life was cut short, you know, for, you know, probably a myriad of reasons. But that doesn't change my overall opinion of the work that he produced. And, you know, it's sad, of course, but even if he was still alive and he was producing work that looked just like this, I still would not, I don't think I would appreciate it, you know, the same way that some others would. And I think that's okay. But for me, it just, I wouldn't go out of my way to go to a store, find an art book of Basquiat and, you know, have it sitting on top of my bookshelf or my coffee table. Be like, this is inspiration. You know, I don't think that's not going to happen.
I think also it's kind of a contextual thing in that there have been a lot of Basquiat knockoffs. It's going through the same thing as our Starry Night argument, where we're sick of Starry Night because we see Starry Night everywhere. And so when I'm walking down the street in Chelsea or wherever in New York, and there are these big fancy tourist kinds of galleries, and they all have some kind of Basquiat knockoff in their windows, and you say, ah, this is for someone that doesn't know about art. They're just looking for something famous that they recognize. And I think that there's a little bit of a feeling of that around his work.
Seven Angelic says PR overshadows a lot of work by making it a story or status to buy, sadly. And I think especially today, that's becoming even more relevant because I think a lot of artists now, people think about them as personalities more than ever, because many centuries ago, it wasn't really about that. And now a lot of it is the persona, the mystique around the person. All right, Lauren, what's your take on Jordan's underrated pick, Ryan Meyrnerding.
Meyrnerding,
sorry. I just learned about him 10 minutes ago.
That's okay, I'm just helping.
I had no idea who this guy was. I am not very well versed in this kind of style of artwork that's meant for comic books. And so when I was asking Jordan about him, I thought that he had just made up these character outfits entirely, and I said, wow, that's so amazing, but they're actually renditions of it. And so I don't know, I kind of categorize this person in my head as somewhere as doing Magic the Gathering type art, where I like it and would probably have cards of it, but I wouldn't put it on my wall.
Jordan, why is he underrated?
I think he's underrated. Well, because first off, one, he's just really skilled at what he does. And two, it's what he does is unique in the sense that he is creating artwork that's meant to go in film and inspire millions of people. Like, how many times do you walk down the street on Halloween and you see kids dressed up like the characters that he helped design? Now, obviously, he didn't create the characters. He didn't create the Iron Mans and the Spider-Mans. But the modern take on how we view him it's kind of his thing. And obviously there are other artists involved, but there's something about that to me, how broad that landscape is and what he's done in the comic and film world.
Jordan, we have a question for you from Tired, who's asking, is it digital?
Yes. As far as I know, this is all digital work. I imagine it's Photoshop.
It's just,
it's hard for me to get on board for him because he may be technically extremely accomplished. I mean, trust me, he paints better digitally than I do, although that's not very difficult. But I think if he had been the guy that invented the character, then I would be like, okay, that's incredible. Invent these iconic characters that have last decades. But he's just taking the design and revamping it. I don't think that's that hard, is it?
It is really hard, actually, because the thing is, when you have a character that's as iconic as the ones here, like, everyone knows who these characters are. But that part of it has to do with the fact that he revamped it for this modern era. Like, no one cared about Iron Man back in 2006. You know, it's because of the designs that he pulled off in the movie and all that stuff. And now people are like, oh my gosh, we all love Tony Stark. And I think well, you only care about Doctor Strange because of Benedict. but part of it comes from the art side of things, and it's inspired a whole industry and a whole studio that everyone wants to mimic what Marvel Studios is doing, and these characters. So, yeah, I think it's really, really solid.
Well, Lauren, what do you think about just the sheer visibility? Because if you're making character designs for these huge millions of dollar movies, I don't know, is it that rough? I don't know.
Well, nobody knows your name. You're working in this giant facility of bajillion people. You become a cog and part of this massive machine, which is definitely a valid way to do art. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm not super well versed in what this guy has done and what is in the Marvel universe to begin with. So people are going to hate me here, but I'm thinking of lots of comic book characters or that have been turned into movies that I really raised my eyebrow at for the outfits. I'm thinking of there was one movie where that came out recently where there's an apocalypse thing in a building and all of the warrior women are wearing these ridiculous armor suits. And
come on, Wonder Woman? Is that what you're talking about?
I think it was Wonder Woman.
That's not this guy.
Okay. Well, okay. So maybe he's doing a good job. I don't listen to my opinion here. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Jane H., giving you some ammunition here, Jordan. Exactly. My husband is a huge comics nerd and barely knew who Iron Man was before the first movie. And Octasia says, but yeah, it's even more impressive, I think, at least, if a piece of that caliber with many pieces is comprised of their own original characters. All right. I mean, I will say it's hard probably to be this responsible for such a gigantic movie. And people are so protective about these just very loved characters. And they get so angry if, like, look at what happened with Sonic the Hedgehog. People were so worked up about it. I do think as a creator, you probably have somewhat of a responsibility there. It's almost like you're gonna be screwed no matter what. So the fact that these are popular movies probably is a reflection of what a good job he did.
Yeah, like the thing is, like, you have these iconic characters that have been around for half a century, right? How do you make people recognize these characters and yet ramp them up to get new audiences interested? So you have to, you can't just catch the old audience or old fans. You have to catch the kids who are coming out, the teenagers. And you also have to just make it really, really cool and updated, you know? Like, you can't, like, 1960s cartoon logic does not work in the MCU. So how do you update that? How is Iron Man's suit designed? How does Captain America's shield work? How does Spider-Man's web shooters work? Like, those are all things that an artist has to think about. And they actually have an art book of Black Panther, and it talks about how the designers created the claws that come out. And there's a whole science and technology behind it that we don't really see as we're watching the movie, but they think about all this stuff as they're designing.
All right, let's move on. This is my underrated artist. And I have a very boring reason why I think Gustave Doré is underrated. Honestly, I think it's because his work is black and white and because he's a printmaker. It's just not that sexy to be a black and white printmaker. And especially when the work is very subtle, fairly dark, and not loud and confrontational, I just think he's really slipped under the radar and I feel so bad for him. Lauren, what do you think about Doré?
Totally agree. I didn't learn about Doré in school. I learned about it through Sam, who loves printmaking books. And I just, It's amazing. We have the Dante's Inferno one, and I like to photocopy it and just use those as references for things, or even collage bits for things. They are so incredible, and they are so well done. And I just agree with everything you said, that people just roll their eyes because he didn't go into the painting world, which has all the accolades.
Oh, Sleipnir! This hurts! Oh. Sleipnir is saying so far Doré is meh. Well, let's hear what Jordan has to say.
I agree with both of you. I think Doré is amazing, and I've always admired his lighting and his compositions. And then just the subject matter of what he's doing. A lot of his stuff is, you know, biblical imagery, which is challenging in and of itself. And so to be, you know, to tell really unique stories and tell it successfully and with such skill, I think it's just, it's amazing. And I still look at his work to this day.
And you know something else that really bothers me about printmakers being appreciated in general is people do not understand the technical skill it takes to pull off engravings that look like this. I mean, I tried engraving for maybe 10 minutes when I was in art school, and it's this horrible tool called a burin that's just really awkward. And I look at this stuff and I'm like, people just have no idea how much work this is and the type of technique it requires to make something like this. What do you think, Lauren, about the technique? I mean, some people might just say, oh, well, who cares? It's just the image.
Well, yeah, that's what I think the issue is that there are so many ways to make an image nowadays that only, he's like a printmaker's printmaker. That's the term that I would use for it, because only printmakers can admire the level of intensity and skill needed to make this kind of image. I know that when we were at RISD, all the printmakers hung out together and talked their printmakery terms, because that image is so much more than the image. It's the entire process to get there.
Well, Jordan, what do you think about the technique? I mean, is that something you notice in prints? Or, because I know you're not a printmaker, and I'm just curious to know if it's something you consider when you look at the work.
To be honest, I didn't even realize it was printmaking. I just was like, oh, he's drawing with ink. I honestly thought that until you educated me a couple minutes ago before the stream started.
We're learning so many things.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. So I never really considered it. I was just like, this work is really cool. And I guess to me, that's with anything. I find as long as I can get into the final result, then I can, you know, that's all I really need. I don't need to know all the techniques that they use unless I do further research, but that's not what initially gets me into it.
But it makes me sad that people think these are pen drawings, like the printmaking part of me. My heart is being ripped apart thinking about that, because I actually have a very large engraving in our living room by one of my colleagues. And my kids told me growing up, they were like, I always assumed that was a ballpoint pen drawing. I'm like, no, it was part of the pyramid out of copper. And it just makes me very upset. So, yeah. AKA says, I think Doré is really impressive. I'm someone with limited patience, and his work seems like it would take an astronomical amount of patience. You don't get to erase that kind of work. I mean, you can, but it's horrible to try to fix something in engraving. So it is not easy. God's Little Artist says, I appreciate the technical application. The subject is a little scary. Well, Lauren, do you think that contributes to him being underrated? That's not pretty.
Yeah, but I think that, well, I don't know, because there are plenty of famous artists that have made very disturbing work. I mean, think of Picasso's Guernica, for instance. Not a happy painting. Or Goya, who I think is another one of your favorites, right, Clara? So I don't think that disturbing images make something unpopular, but I do think that, I guess, you have to be particular about how you're portraying these kinds of things. But that's one of the things that I really love is, as Jordan said, he goes really deep into this very classic imagery, classic stories, biblical and classical and otherwise.
Amanda says, I think it's ironic that we respect Doré much more than modern day illustrators such as, I can't say his name, Meinerding. minor dig, saying that the characters aren't original. Both don't have original characters. What's your take on that, Jordan?
I agree. Thank you, Amanda. You're a rock star. No, but seriously, a lot of it is just about your take. And not to take away from Dore, but if you look at like the original designs or some of the characters, he changed a lot. So when you're taking on something as epic and famous as the Bible and these stories or Dante's Inferno, like that's a challenge. And the fact that we're still talking about this artwork, you know, over 100 years later, it has to say something about the impact that he had.
All right. This is my overrated artist. And before I say anything about this artist, Lauren, what is your opinion? Agree, disagree?
It's not my thing, Clara. I'll put it this way. I am always wowed by sparkly things and images. I like the transparencies and details. I'll just put that out there. I can't help it. I'm a magpie. But I feel like this work is a not as good version of Marilyn Minter, and that makes me roll my eyes like you.
Jordan, what's your take?
I don't mind it. I mean, I'm kind of like ambivalent towards these. Like, technically, I think they're fine, but they're not. If I saw this in a store, like a book of these, I wouldn't go out and out of my way to buy them. You know, there's nothing overly unique about it to me.
Jazz W says, "Is it photography or paint? They're gigantic oil paintings." And she actually went to the same graduate school that I went to, New York Academy of Art. Ugh, which makes me roll my eyes because my whole grad school experience was just a crap storm. But maybe for me, it's my personal bias, but she just represents that, like, figures are pretty. Look at how pretty we are. And she's got a huge social media presence. And I also feel like all her paintings look like her. And it's like, I'm young and cute and look at me in the shower and... like, really? There's nothing else in the world you can engage with? I mean, there's not a lot here to me beyond just total eye candy. Lauren, what do you think now that you know a little bit about her?
Well, I agree. I agree from the beginning. It's very eye candy. I don't want to bash an artist for either being pretty themselves or for using their own bodies in their work. I mean, there are plenty of artists that do that. But I also think that the imagery is fairly repetitive and using the same kinds of, like, wow, look at this transparency of this. Like, it's very wrapped up in its own beauty. That is very true.
Well, Jordan, do you think that people just get into this work because it's just pretty and it doesn't offend everybody? Because people are, like, gaga over her work online. And she shows with Forum Gallery, which is a very well-respected figurative representational art gallery. So what is it, Jordan, that makes her so overrated in my opinion?
Well, you know, I think that could be a lot of it. You know, like, based on the conversation we're having, it seems more like it's the subject matter of what she paints and does rather than the actual quality of the paintings themselves. And I guess it just depends on the personal preference of whether every work you see needs to have a deeper meaning behind it, or if it's just someone in the shower or, you know, someone, you know, about to jump up out of the water. Like, is that always necessary to have 20 meanings behind a painting, or can you just enjoy it for what it is?
Well, and I hear that a lot from people who say, why does art always have to have meaning? Can't it just be what it is? And I'm like, yeah, but this is just so saccharine, and all her bodies of work are basically variations of this. It's either her in the shower, her with a forest, her in water. It's like, oh my gosh, could you just step outside for a second? Because Lillian says to me, you don't want your art to look like you in all your paintings, only maybe a few. What do you think, Lauren? Can you make your work look all like you but still have it not be annoying?
I think that there are artists that have used their bodies in ways that I find poignant and interesting and can continue to use their bodies. But I don't think that that necessarily stays within the realm of the this beauty, the this kind of surface level that I feel like we're sitting on top of. It usually goes deeper into a, you know, a presence or a condition or something like that. And if you, you guys know artists in the comments that do, or you guys in the comments that know artists that use their bodies all the time in their work, portray their bodies that you find really interesting, please put them there because I'm drawing a blank right now. But I think that in this, this kind of content presented this way is not appealing to me. It's not interesting.
Maria says there's technical skill, so I'd love to see other kind of stuff. But since I've never heard of her, I can't really say she's overrated. But I do think is very, quote, Instagrammable. You agree, Jordan?
Yeah, because I had no idea who this person was till about 40 minutes ago. So I can't, I don't know whether or not she's overrated. And I've never, not to me, because I've never heard her name. But I could totally see this being on Instagram in my feed somewhere and pop and people in people's stories. So I really agree with that.
Well, I think I'm partially biased in that people in the graduate school community that I went to, people worship her. And she's constantly held up as, look at how amazing our school is because we produce Alyssa Monks. And I just get so tired of it. It's just really, it's kind of like RISD and Seth MacFarlane. It's like they just can't stop talking about Seth MacFarlane. We're like, yes, we know he went to RISD. It's not that big a deal.
We've got some great people in the comments here that, or great suggestions of people that do use their own self all the time. Cindy Sherman, duh, really interesting personas there. Or here's another from AKA Frida Kahlo. Frida Kahlo makes great paintings of herself. And I'm pulling up some others here. Sorry. Egon Schiele as well.
Anna's giving us a whole list. Jenny Seville, Nicole Eisenman, Carol Lee Sheenman. Oh, Anna Mandieta. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
All of whom use their bodies and their work in very poignant ways. Yeah, way better than
exactly. So we've got a good backing here to show that it's not just the whole self-portraiture thing or using your body a million times. It's this work falls flat in comparison.
All right, Lauren, so this is your underrated artist. Can you tell us about Françoise Guillot? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I think it's Françoise because there's an E at the end and it's French and I know. We were just talking about Basquiat. Françoise Guillot, I think is how you pronounce it. French people, you can correct me. But she is best known as Picasso's ex-wife. And when I Google her, the only things that I get are about her book, her salty book about being salty, about being his ex-wife. But she's a really incredible painter. I had no idea that she made paintings. And they are very much inspired by the cubism field, but they're more organic, they're more related to nature, they're using these very vibrant colors, and I just felt really, they make me feel really happy, and I hope that I can see them in person someday.
Jordan, what's your take on the paintings?
I actually kind of like these. I like the vibrant colors and the shapes, and for me as someone who works in animation, those are like two very key things. So I think even though it's not cartoons or anything like that, my mind automatically, it connects with something like that. So I can appreciate these. And I've never heard of her before. It's actually really cool.
She's still painting. She's, as people have said, she's about 100 years old and she's still painting, which I also find absolutely incredible. She's got a huge swath of work that has this kind of consistency over time. You can still tell it's her, but she has explored many different periods and styles in her life. And I really admire that in an artist. They've just kept going.
Darwin says, not a fan of Picasso, but these paintings are beautiful. Thanks for sharing her work. I didn't know about her either. Now I feel really bad about it because this is really cool work.
Yeah, Yeah, I cannot believe that she's not more well known. Even my painting friends in my class from RISD and from Purchase and from Hunter don't know who she is. That's so terrible.
I mean, I feel bad for her that she was Picasso's wife. I mean, he was sort of a jerk. But on top of that, I mean, how can you really have any type of art career if you're married to somebody like Picasso? Jordan, what do you think about that backstory?
Yeah, that's rather unfortunate that as soon as Lauren said that she's known as Picasso's ex-wife, we all automatically, I feel like, go like, oh, okay, got it. Like, we have a picture formed in our heads. But, you know, the fact that that's what we would connect her with is unfortunate, because the work, I feel like, should stand on its own. Because these are really fun things. And I think I saw someone in the comments say that they like this more than Picasso's work. And I kind of agree with that. I've never been a huge Picasso fan, to be honest.
I'm not a Picasso fan. I like the colors in this way more. I mean, they're so luscious and rich. I always felt like Picasso paintings were either every color in the universe or that annoying cubist monochrome thing. Like, he actually was not that adventurous when it comes to color. I'm curious about your take on that, Lauren, color in Picasso.
Well, I don't think about color at all when I think about Picasso. My personal feelings are that I've never liked him, and people always give me flack for that. And I understand, but I do understand his importance in history and how big a deal he was. It just sucks that he's such a big personality in the art world that he seems to cast this giant shadow over a lot of people around him, and unfortunately, a lot of women around him.
Ray says she wrote that when Picasso dumped her, galleries quit handling her work. Oh, see, that just infuriates me. It's like that has nothing to do with the quality of the artwork. And I just think that that's so unfair that a lot of the times things are done that way. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, like I said before, I think the work should stand on its own. And I get the feeling that she wasn't trying to ride on her husband's or ex-husband's coattails. You know, like, she's like, I want to stand up as my own individual artist who has a unique vision. And the fact that they treated her that way, I have to look that up and get into it. But if a gallery is treating her that way after something that, you know, is a personal matter, I just think that's completely uncalled for and unfair.
Becky Baker says, art world recognition throughout history has been male dominated. So with her age, is likely that played a role in her not being recognized. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's horrific when you think about all the people that were in the art history book that I studied from in art school. It's pretty homogenous. And then being Picasso's wife on top of that must just be even worse. Like Jazz says, it was a man's world back then. It still kind of is. And it's really difficult, I think. Teen Jew says Picasso sabotaged a lot of his ex-wives. I mean, see, it makes me mad that we're talking about her right now, and we're talking about how good her paintings are, and yet half the conversation has been about Picasso.
Still is.
We're not even trying to do that. We're trying to give her a little bit of a shout out, and yet we're still talking about Picasso. Well, isn't that horrible, Lauren?
I would say that people should look up more of her work after this, because I picked three pieces, but she is incredibly prolific and has such a range. And I also think that it is important to say that she was extremely influenced by him and by the Cubist work. She's gone through a whole Cubist phase that's like very Cubist, that fits very much amongst Picasso and Gris and... Oh, the other one, Brock. Brock is the other one, Cubist. So it's not like she was also in a vacuum just herself. She was in conversation with these other people in the art world, and she comes from that. She does owe a lot to that as well.
All right, Lauren, this is your overrated artist. Can you tell us who Carol Dunham is?
Carol Dunham is a painter, but he is also Lena Dunham's dad. So got those two things there. And I hadn't made that connection at first. I think I learned about him in undergrad. So half of his work can be broken up into segments, okay? The first half is basically him trying to be Philip Guston and failing, because of course you can't be Philip Guston, and then him basically being George Kondo and failing. George Kondo drives me nuts, but in this kind of way that I'm so angry that I love it. And then the most recent portion is this very shocking, vulgar, not safe for work kind of art. And I love plenty of not safe for work kinds of art, but I just, it's so caveman-y that I just roll my eyes. You guys, again, look this up. We couldn't post it in the stream. It's not, we would get demonetized probably.
Jordan, what's your take on Carol Dunham?
I could see all of Lauren's points, honestly. I'm not like that engaged with it. If I were walking in a museum and I saw it, I would probably just take one glance, be like, and just walk right on. And I'm not trying to be mean. I don't think every artist should, I feel like every artist should have, you know, their work looked at and stuff, but there's nothing here that is really drawing me to it. I prefer the Francois Guillot. Is that how you say it?
Close enough,
right? The previous artist we looked at. I would prefer looking at her work compared to his.
Slepnir says, Lauren, you're being too tough on cavemen. Their work is way better.
This is so true!
I know, I would take Caves of Lasco over Carol Dunham in a heartbeat, for sure. And we have another comment up here from Seven Angelic, who says, caveman playboy art.
Yeah, that's... I think the caveman reference was also maybe towards the figures in some of his more recent paintings, too, a little bit. They feel caveman-esque, and maybe less drawn by a caveman.
Nicholas Carroll says, this is a bit juvenile. See, here's the thing. I don't mind artwork that has a childlike tone to it. That's fine. And this is not my personal taste in terms of paintings. But I think that good artwork can in some ways surpass or get over your personal biases. Because sometimes, have you ever seen a work in a museum and you're like, oh, that type of work is not my cup of tea, but I actually like this piece a lot. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
This doesn't do that.
Yeah. Well, actually, you said that. And I was going to say that this piece here was actually one of the pieces that kind of grew on me after looking at it so often when pulling these images. This really black and white piece here. But I think he just goes over himself or is too into himself a lot of the times in these pieces. They're very one trick.
Well, Jordan, do you think that Carol Dunham is trying to capitalize on shock value? I mean, we're not showing the not safe for work images. If you're curious, you can go look it up. But I can't help but think that that's not part of it.
I don't know if I know too many artists who can go there who don't capitalize on shock value. You know, like there's some artists who are just like, yeah, I'm not going there. That's not my lane. Like I personally don't want to go in that lane. But if I knew that I could do this and that people would be interested in my work if I did it, I would do it all the time. So, like really, because what's the point of making all this work is that people will look at it, people will buy it, your name gets bigger and all that stuff. So, you know, there's that phrase, if you got it, flaunt it. And I think that's probably what's happening here, just with a couple canvases.
Angie says, the compositions are pretty awful. He should watch Art Prof for tips. Well, I think he should. He could certainly get some good information from us. Anastasia says, are these pieces supposed to look awful? I mean, there's a whole genre of painting that's about looking terrible. And there's also, I think, this version of it's so bad, it's good, but this is just bad. Lauren, what do you
think?
Well,
again, so I look at this tree piece and I'm immediately thinking of Philip Guston when he went into his more cartoony phase and everybody was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You are such an amazing abstract expressionist painter. And then eventually his was the kind of work that got so, that was so good that even though it was not to people's taste, it was accepted after a while. But then similarly to what happened with Basquiat, everybody was like, oh, Philip Guston, he did a cool thing. I'm going to do this thing because it's cool. Or just like, I'm so in love with this person, I'm going to try to emulate them, which I definitely understand. But then you get to this point in trying to take all that person's tricks that you end up not necessarily saying anything new. So that's where I feel a lot of the time is I see this and I'm seeing a different artist. I'm not seeing him.
Jane says, is he trying to, quote, say something with these, though? We keep talking about how art shouldn't be just pretty with no message.
True.
Are these the opposite, then? Jordan, what's your reaction to that?
I honestly don't know. I just learned about this artist the same time as you all in the audience have. I'm sure there's a message, but I guess the question is it a strong one? Is it one that's worth investing in? Because, you know, it's like, you ever have those children's books that have some sort of encrypted message in there and you have to find the code and the pictures and the rest of the book? And it always comes out being some stupid message that wasn't worth all the investment. So this could be an example of one of those. I don't know his work well enough to say what he's talking about.
But see, my argument is that if you can't get something out of it, and you feel the need to have a book explain it to you, that's not good for the artwork, because I think effective artwork, I mean, it's nice to know that supplementary stuff, but the work should stand on its own. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, I don't know what you're trying to say, dude. Like, I don't get this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We do have many other streams that talk about our staff picks for, quote, bad composition. So you can all check those out. And remember, this Google slideshow is available. The link is in the YouTube video description below and also on artprof.org. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And in a few minutes, Jordan and Lauren will be in the ArtProf Discord. Please join them in the post live streams channel for some chatting. Subscribe to our channel, like this video, leave a comment. We need some help with those YouTube gods. But we do have the help of our top Patreon supporters. Thank goodness. And look at this. We are ready for a third slide. So who's going to be the person to start that third slide? If you've been thinking about it, this is going to be a big deal to start that third slide. So everybody, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.